This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You obviously saw the Bubba show.
Yeah.
And this whole debate, are you guys athletes or not?
Yep. When I heard that y'all wanted me to come on, I was like, well, we got to go around the racetrack first. That's the first thing we got to do. But I thought it'd be great to go out there. This is a really, really good car. And you guys can feel the G's and feel the grip and feel the, you know, hear the sounds, the smells and all the things. And just at least walk away with a good experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'm going to go first because you told me earlier that that's when you warm up the car and then we're not going to hit 180 today.
Each run, I should get a little quicker.
All right, bet.
I'm going first. Hey,
I get a little braver. Each run.
Yeah. Oh, you got to climb in?
Yeah, you got to. Nah, open the door.
Oh.
Yeah. And then sit on the door and then throw the next leg in and just slide down in there like perfect. You.
Like an athlete.
Your foot in the shoe.
He looks so nervous. He's scared for real.
I'm scared for real.
Push through.
Push get in through. There, man.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. Do it from there.
Hell no. I can't do it.
Get in the car. Close it.
Ah!
What's wrong? Where you going?
I ain't going. Oh.
Man, jump in the car.
All right, hold on, Darryl. I'm sorry. I'm embarrassed right now.
Brandon, it's going to be all right.
You want some water?
Huh?
You want water?
Hold on. Give me 10 seconds.
No. Water? Don't pacify him.
2 laps, Dale, okay?
All right.
It's all fun until the rabbit got the gun.
You are a grown man.
Shut your ass up.
Started from the bottom, but we made the top. Found out what the blueprint was.
That's bad.
Lying.
I love it.
Four hours of that? Wow. With 40 other cars, right? 10.
Bro, that's an airplane. Oh my goodness. That's insane. I get it now. All right, let me out.
I get it now.
Ah, how you feeling, B?
It's like the snake when we had Tarzan on and I overcame that fear. I feel good about it.
Just tackle it.
Thanks, Dale.
Your leg shaky?
No. I was, once I got in, I was good. I used my little exercises.
Oh, Fred's next.
Yeah.
Fred, are you up, right?
Sounds good. Left foot in.
Yep.
Here?
I can help you.
Hey,
help.
Dale, how fast did we hit?
Yes, right now. 160, maybe?
160?
I'm sure.
All right.
For real?
Yeah, he was taking it easy on me. Turn up the bass, now go. I need the whole earth to hear my flow. My flow. Bitch act like you know. 1, 2, 3, we've been here before. How it gets so dark, niggas act dumb when you get too small. Getting high in a damn airport, contact high for my damn ass score.
I don't need a helmet. I don't need a helmet. Look at my head. Let's go, Dale. No helmet.
Is it bad?
No, I didn't feel it till the second lap.
Oh.
Yo, oh, that's scary.
One more lap with the windows down. Let's go. Please. Ah, yeah. Yo, that was beautiful. Oh, my shoes. On the back end, I tell her you gotta chill.
Yeah.
It burned my.
He didn't want to mess up his forces. He had the crispy forces on. See, Dale, that's a black thing. If you don't know that, right? Like, you get brand new shoes, you don't want to crease the top. You familiar with it?
Yeah. They still clean though.
This is something that I can't say that you're an athlete. When I see that on ESPN, which is a sports avenue, I'm like, I don't know if that's a sport.
Dale. 2016, Martinsville. Get back in that mode with Chan, okay? Yeah. Give it to him.
Let's get it there. We're men in here now.
That's right.
He's getting the real Dale Jr. That's what he's getting right now.
Oh boy, have some power there, boy. Goodness gracious.
Hey, are they athletes now?
Hellified drivers. Boy, you right. That corner right there?
Yeah.
Your head, you lose your head, right?
I be leaning. I was leaning over there by Dale, man. Like, you too close to this wall, buddy. Yeah.
You know, it would go so fast, I couldn't even tell when we were passing you guys.
Right.
Yeah. That's
pretty cool. I don't know about athletic,
but almost ain't
it's impressive.
You say almost athletic?
Almost athletic.
Yeah. So we're here at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and we got in the car. We have Bubba on, and this fool said that you guys aren't athletes. I feel like you owe Dale and every driver and all of NASCAR an apology, because what I experienced today was real.
Yes, I will say it is a hard skill set.
Sure.
That's what I would say. The athletic part, the physical, you know, pulling it out of you. I can't go all the way to athlete Dale, but I will say, to drive that car as fast as you do into those turns and around this track was amazing to be a part of. So I would take the respect level up a couple notches.
I didn't think that I was going to change your mind with what we did today, but I don't know that we're like full-fledged athletes. Like you see in college, NFL, baseball, like a stick and ball sport athlete is. We definitely don't use our bodies the same way. But I also look at the NFL, and there's guys that are more athletic, physically gifted, right, than some guys. And I kind of see it that way, because there's some guys in our sport that take their health really seriously, run triathlons and marathons and do things that really probably are unnecessary, but they're just competitive. And then there's some guys that don't take their health serious at all. So it is hard when you see those guys get out with the big bellies and stuff and say, yeah, we're athletes, man. Look at all of us. Because some of us don't look like athletes.
But by definition, because these guys like to be black and white a lot of the time, right? So by definition, you're an athlete. You went and you defined it, right? You looked it up.
That's right.
Yes.
And you're proficient at your physical activity, which is racing. So you are, by definition, an athlete. Now we have to question whether you're athletic.
Sure.
There's a difference.
I
think that's what Channing should have said in the Bubba episode.
Well,
you can question that like golfers. They question all the time. Are golfers athletic? I know some that are. They're very athletic. But also, I know that they're athletes. So you guys are athlete, in my opinion. Athletic, I don't know. I have to see you do something.
I think that's a great way. I think that's a great way to put it.
If someone is athletic, there's a specific skill that they're really good at.
Yeah.
There's a specific skill.
I think it's multiple skills.
Well, there are multiple skills you have to be good at to be going 190 and all left, like you say.
Wow.
You know, you got to be strategic. You don't just go out here and just drive. You know, there's a certain mental capacity it takes to be able to do what they do with other people out here driving with them.
For me, when we hit that first turn and I saw your hands, you know, because when we drive, it's like, we're here.
Relaxed.
Right. You know, so you would think, okay, they're just going left and here. I saw your hands just on the going 180 miles per hour, 160 for me, 160 miles per hour probably. And just like feeling like any second this driver, this car can go out of, can be out of control. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. That's when it hit for me.
We'll go to Atlanta, for example, and that's typically early in the season. You're not in like racing shape or your mind, because you got to relax. You got to relax your hands. And when we go to Atlanta, we'll go out on the track and it's super fast and there's a lot of grip and it's really scary and nerve wracking. And the first 10 laps of practice, I'll grip the wheel so hard that your hands are cramping and hurting up real bad. And you have to remind yourself to relax, because you can just expend so much energy unnecessarily in a short period of time, and you have to race for 4 hours, right? And you have to hold the wheel just really carefully and not grab it as hard as you can. And so after like a few weeks, you sort of, your body gets used to it and your mind, you get used to the heat. The heat's the worst thing. You know, Bubba talked about it with you guys, 150 degrees in some of the most worst case scenarios. It's really about an average of 120, 125 degrees. And we sweat a lot and just lose a lot of water weight. You don't have to physically be strong because the car's got power steering, but your back has to be strong. You're using back muscles to hold yourself up in the seat and doing things like that that have to kind of be tough and deal with all that. But it's all about nutrition, hydration. A lot of guys will run, ride bikes and stuff like that to get themselves sort of in that endurance mode, because it is an endurance deal. But physical strength, I've never lifted. I never was regular in the gym.
Right.
I would either run or bike and just try to put myself in conditions where heat was a problem to try to get used to that.
What made you the best?
A lot of things, I think, play into a guy being great. There's a thing that you're born with.
Mm.
It's a it factor. Raw speed is what I like to call it.
Raw speed.
You got raw. You can see it in these young guys. You'll put them in anything with wheels and they figure out how to make it go fast. And some guys learn that and acquire that ability over time. And then there's some guys that just have it. They just know. It's a raw, like when we're driving around a track, you could feel, I don't know if you could feel in the seat of your pants, the grip of the car. How much we had, how much might have been left. Guys can sense that really fast. Some guys that have that gift, and they're the magical ones. They're the special ones that you just know are going to be superstars. And there's only a couple that come along every sort of generation that become the superstar, that have the whole package, like the mental side off the track, keep themselves out of trouble, stay focused in their personal life. The professional life, they can do it all, right? And they know how to market themselves, too, because this is such an important part of our sport. Everything we got's got patches and associated to some corporate entity. And so the marketing side of that, you have to embrace it. A lot of guys, myself included, when I came into the sport, I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't care about that. I just want to race. I hate doing sponsor appearances. I hate gripping and grinning and making people happy. I just want to race. But that's such an important part, even more so now.
That spark, when did it turn into a flame? Did seniors say, hey,
oh, man,
let's go?
When I was 13 years old, my dad was really focused on his own career. He wasn't, like, going to go out in the yard and play with me on a go-kart. He wasn't going to do that kind of thing with me. He'd come home. He'd go to work at the shop in the morning, and he'd come home at 9 o'clock at night and sit on his recliner, pop that thing back, and be asleep in 20 seconds. And so I didn't have a lot of time to, you know, pick his ear and say, hey, what do I need to do? What should I be helping? You know, how do I get where I want to go? 13 years old, I remember sitting on the couch And he pops in that recliner 9 o'clock at night. And I was like, Dad, I'm 13 and I can't wait anymore. It's driving me crazy. I want to race so bad. I can't stand it. I don't know what to do. And you don't seem to get it. Like, you don't seem to understand how bad I want to do this. And I was really, I might not have outwardly exuded that energy to him, right? He probably looked at me and went, I had no clue. Because I just didn't outwardly, I was short and just quiet and shy in the 80s. You know, the feeling or the idea was you had to have a driver's license to race anything. It's changed. Got kids doing it now. But back when I was trying to get into it, I thought I was going to have to wait till I was 16. I was freaking out because I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. And one day I came into the shop. And he threw a newspaper down on the table, and there was a sports page from the Charlotte Observer that was talking about this new series. And you could basically take a car off the street and put a roll cage in it and race it. And he said, you should figure out how to do this. And so it took a couple $100. I had me a car, and we and my brother went and started racing. And that's
so he said, you figure it out. If you want it, you figure it out.
Yeah, he wasn't gonna build the car. Only thing he did, literally the only thing he did with his hands was make sure it was safe, right? I wasn't going to get hurt. The roll cage was in it right. The belts were mounted right and everything like that. But he was like, here's a series you and your brother can get in today. So I needed a roll cage. So I went to a race shop that had a car that was destroyed, but the roll cage in the center part, like where we sat, is good. So we cut that off. We cut the roof off of a 79 Monte Carlo, stuck the roll cage in it, welded the roof back on it. Took the motor out. We rebuilt the motor. It was like a 283, little small motor. Wasn't going to do nothing, but we wanted to go out and learn. We didn't need the fastest car right away. We just needed to go out there and figure it out. And so we went out there. We blew that motor all to pieces in the first race, broke the cam in three places, and we had a blast. Me and my brother, I was 15 or 16. My brother was older than me and had kids, and he had his boys on the weekend, on every other weekend. So I'd drive it when he had his boys, and when he didn't have his boys, he would drive it. So we alternated in the car, in and out, till we finally built the second one halfway through the year. But wow. I had a go-kart. I sold it for $500. Me and my brother Kerry went to a junkyard and pulled that 79 Monte Carlo out of there. We went to a gas station and got $100. We went to a Hardee's and got $500 and put them on the hood. We went to a junkyard. I know a man at the junkyard. We was going to need parts. We was going to bend the front suspension and break things on the car. Wow. So I went to the junkyard and put that guy's name on the back of the car.
Wow.
So I could go into his junkyard and get parts when I needed them. So we really did, like,
you built
make
it from
this
the,
ourselves,
we,
right?
But we say you built it from the mud. You came from the mud.
Yes.
You got it out. But that's the conversation we had a couple weeks ago on our show where you said, look, I'm not going to push my kids into anything. They'll show you what they want. And then that's when, right? You said they'll just do it.
Yeah, it's the passion.
Remember what I told you, though?
You don't have to force it.
Sometimes when they already have that it factor, you don't have to push. And it's funny, the first thing he says is that it factor.
Right.
Like sometimes your child already has it. You don't have to push. And Shan, to your case, those that do push and try to live through their kids because they weren't able to make it in whatever their dream or passion might have been, forcing them, they're what? What are they, the parents that do that?
Losers. If you try to live through your kids, you're a loser. I'll say it the rest of my life.
I got two little girls, and I don't know what they're going to want to do. I'm a new dad. I'm figuring this out every day. But I kind of feel like you said, Fred, where you let them show you what they want to do, what their interest is. And because if my girls want to race, that's going to be hard. Just the girls, right? It's a hard, it's difficult.
Right.
And so, but if they want to do it, I'm going to go right with them and
just
try to make sure
them.
When
they say that too, you expose them to.
Is it still difficult even during these times now? Wouldn't it be even easier now for them?
It's certainly gotten easier. My sister, when I started racing, my sister started racing. It was hard. And she finally quit because of how difficult it was emotionally on her. And I mean, I've been at the track with her practicing and her just break down because she's getting pushed around or she just was having a hard time feeling accepted, feeling like she belonged there. And so, you know, since there's a lot of time that's passed, Danica's came through, changed a lot of people's perspective about it. She showed she showed natural ability and showed that in the proper situation she could do well. And so I think, you know, my girl's got a long time for that opportunity ever would come, but I'm sure it'll be even easier then. But it still won't be as easy as I'd like it to be.
You speak of Danica. When she came in, a lot of stigma around still. You know, I didn't know your sister Kelly. She actually was in the sport and raced. But because of that experience of what you saw your sister go through, was there anything you did? It was like, I'm going to help Danica. Did you ever go out your way to say, you know what, I support you, I'm with you? Or was it always, I'm going to kick your ass because you're a driver just like I am?
So Danica raced for us. So she was our driver. Right. And I think that Danica would say that some of her best years in a stock car were in races she ran for us. She had really good performances. She had a great relationship with her crew chief, Tony Jr., he was my cousin. I feel like that we gave her a really great opportunity to succeed, and I feel like she did. You know, she eventually graduated into the Cup Series, drove for somebody else.
Right.
And so I think that she ran great in our cars, as good as every other guy in our cars was running.
So was it you or Kelly that stood on the table for Danica to join your team?
I was about it because I'd watched Danica race before she got to Indy. And so I wanted her to succeed. I wanted her to be a big deal. And
time out, go back. What's Indy? Like, we're learning. I mean, Ocho, he seemed like an expert. So you got a lot of people watching this. We don't know. Teach us, educate us, you know.
So Danica's racing origins were in open wheel cars like the Indy 500. She was creating a buzz, you know, when she was working her way up through the ranks. And so I'm like, man, she's marketable. She's good. She's fast. I hope this continues. She goes into the Indy series, the top open wheel series. She won a race in Japan. She ran really good at Indy 500 a couple times. And then she tried to come to NASCAR. And then she came to drive for my team. That's a hard change it's like going from football to try to become a great at baseball, right? Mm-hmm. It takes a whole different, you know, skill level. And so a lot of guys, almost all of them that tried to transfer from Indy to NASCAR fail. And they all do. And, wow. And most of the guys that go from stock cars to the open wheel cars typically fail.
That leading up to my next question, I'm glad you just said that. So just curious, hypothetically speaking, if you were to take Lewis Hamilton and put him in the right situation, the right team, do you still think the results would be the same in the difference from F1 to NASCAR?
If Lewis came to drive our car?
Yeah, just in general.
He's elite.
Right.
He's like that, he's that
1%.
He's that one of a kind guy.
What makes a driver elite?
He's magic, man, he's got a magic.
Magic.
So I would guess it's like,
you just see a gift, like you know.
You guys see it on the field when you watch a guy play, a running back.
Like Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes.
You talked about it today, playing chess. You're looking five steps ahead. You know what's getting ready to happen before the next guy does. And you know how you got to apply yourself in the gym, doing your studying, right. Watching film. Drivers watch film. We never watch film. We watch film now. All of them watch themselves, watch last year's race. All the drivers want to know the strategy and what might come and what might not come. And so he's the kind of guy that applies himself across the board. Plus, he has the factor, that raw speed. So I think he would figure it out.
What I saw when I came on your campus today, I mean, you have cars everywhere, just, you know, offices, all these people. You know, a production company, and I learned you have 14 companies. And, you know, even when you look at the car, if I'm saying it's the racing company, you got four drivers running the Xfinity series. How do you keep all that together?
And people. Like, you know, you got people here that you trust to help you move this around, right? And go places, and it's going to be right. It's going to be done first class. Your editor guys are going to kick butt. You put people in position like my sister. Now, I should give her a ton of credit because she deserves it. She's the brains. She is the one that understands the budget, like where we are financially as a race team. She helps me understand what are good opportunities for me in the business world. And you put certain people in control of each, you know, entity and each objective, you know, and allow them to be creative and come up with amazing ideas and try to steer this project in the right direction, right? And some of them fail, some of them don't. I used to say that when I was trying to get going in racing, when I just started racing, I used to say, I want to find my Foreman grill. Mm-hmm. You know, George Foreman had the grill. And I'm like, everybody wants that Foreman grill. I want my Foreman grill.
Right, right.
And so I was going to go out there, and if it sounded like a good deal or a good partnership to be in, I was going to see if it stuck. No matter what the business was, if it made sense, if it was connected to my brand. And so we tried a lot of different things and had success in some areas and learned some hard mistakes and hard lessons in others. And you just keep going back until you find something that works. And so hopefully it's more than one thing, right? Hopefully it's multiple things.
Right. And that's one of the things I've learned early on in my business career is people, process, and then the product.
Does polling really matter depending on the car you have?
The setting on the pole?
Bro, you speaking like you a driver. Like you still, no. I don't know what polling is. Can you?
Placing, where you start. Does it really matter depending on the car you have?
I don't, you know, I never put a lot of stock in where I qualified for a race. Every race, since COVID, things have changed a little bit. But typically on a race weekend, there's some practice. Then we're going to qualify. That's going to set the lineup where you're going to start and you're going to go out and run the race. I never really put a lot of stock in it because it's a 500-mile, typically a 500-mile race. A lot of time to figure out how to get yourself toward the front. If you qualified in the back, you just – sometimes I even like qualifying back there because I love to move forward. Mm. I never really loved qualifying on the front row because you got all those guys
behind
you, the pressure, right? You can feel that energy. They're chasing you, man, and you've got to keep them back. You start there, so you got to keep them there the whole time. You got to keep them behind you the whole time. When you start in the back, you get to enjoy sort of working your way toward the front and climbing a mountain, if you will. And I always enjoyed that.
Did you coming behind your father, being the Michael Jordan, whatever name you want to put out there, sports? We call them haters.
Yeah.
Did anybody hate on you saying, oh, that's just Dale's boy?
Oh,
they didn't
yeah.
really believe in you?
Absolutely. I mean, all the way to the very end, even today. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys had a father that excelled at something. I mean, he won 7 championships, and he won, you know, 80 races, 70-some races. When I started, I wanted to pay my power bill, my phone bill. I wanted to do this for a living, right? I didn't want to work. I didn't set these like, I'm going to be a champion. I'm going to win 50 races. I just wanted to make it. And I kept on thinking about like, if I ran a race, I would go, all right, did I make it? Did that race prove that I belong here? When will I feel comfortable? Like I'm going to be able to hold on to this position I have in the sport for as long as I want, so I can make a living here. And that was really all I wanted to do. And my dad, he was this massive thing to a lot of people. And growing up, watching that, it was awesome, right? My dad was a superhero in my eyes. And I watched people adore him and want to make contact with him and want to be around him. And I thought, man, that's awesome. It made me look at him like this incredible thing. But then when I tried to compete, I knew I wasn't going to do what he did. I just knew I wasn't going to do it. He was a once-in-a-generation kind of guy. And only Richard Petty had won 7 titles, and he come along and did it. And since then, only one other guy's ever done that, Jimmy Johnson. I just knew I wasn't going to measure up as hard as I tried. And he was an intimidator. He was the man in black. He scared people. You know, people said, you don't want him on your bumper. You don't want to see him in your mirror. And he played up to that. That was his personality.
So he was a villain in a
sense. He was a villain. A little bit, yeah. But
can I read something
to
you?
Yeah.
All right. Since we're talking about pops, Daytona, 2001. When I realized that dad was gone, there was a noise coming out of me that I can't recreate. It was just like a blow of shock and sorrow and fear I went back in the bus in my room and I shut the door to my bedroom and just sat there. And I thought to myself in that very moment, I was like, I'm going to have to do this by myself the rest of my life. He was like having a dad, like a cheat sheet. Having dad was like knowing all the answers to everything. And I was like, man, I'm going to have to do this without him for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's what it was like. You would call him and be like, I can't figure this out. And he would just be like, silly, it's simple, man. Fix it. This is how you do this. This is what you need to do. This is how you, he knew how to treat people. He knew how to, he just did everything right in my eyes. And then, and I thought we were going to do this together, right? And I was racing with, for him. I drove his car. He owned my car. I was racing for him and I was winning. We were celebrating. We got tight. We weren't real tight for a long time. And so when I lost him, man, it was like, this, I thought I was on this path that was going to be just this linear, smooth ascension to something great. And I thought, now I'm not sure, you know, what I'm going to do. I could screw this up, right? I don't know that I have the wisdom and the ability to do what he did.
So Daytona 2001, got Michael Waltrip. And you battling out, Pops is behind you. Was he pushing you?
He was just sitting back there. He was sitting just kind of watching me and Michael. Yeah.
So you guys take it, and it's the last lap.
Yeah.
When did it really hit you?
So we were, step back to before the race. Dad says to me and Michael, Michael's my teammate. I drive Dad's car, and Michael's my teammate, and those are Dad's car. He just started this business. He just started this race team, right? And this is his baby. This is going to be his future. He's got a couple more years, and he's going to retire. And he told us before the race, he said, if we all work together and help each other, one of us can win. And I'm young, and I'm like, I don't know. That's a silly idea. I'm going to win. It's going to be because of something I did.
Right.
Not nothing y'all did. And so, you know, we're running all day long, and it's a 500-mile race at Daytona. It takes forever. It feels like it's 6 hours, but we're sitting there running, and it comes down to the last lap, and I didn't have any, there was nothing I was going to be able to do in that last lap to pass Michael. He was just too fast, but I was pretty comfortable that I was going to run second. I didn't know where things were going to net out for Dad. He had a lot of guys nipping at his heels and trying to get around him, and I just looked in the mirror and saw him crash, and him in another car, and we were driving away from that accident, right? And it's, you know, in the mirror just getting smaller, and I thought, I just had a sense that just it what it usually when we crash, we just go get another car. We bring two to every race, so if we tear one up, we'll just pull out that other car. Let's just get that other car out and let's go. And if we crash in a race, we just get out and go home. But I just thought in my head for a second, I was like, this is weird. This don't feel right. And so we come around after the race is over. We got to drive back around the track one time to come down the pits. And I seen his car sitting there in the grass and all of the ambulances and the trucks around it and the steam and the smoke and just the picture didn't look good. And so I was like, I'm going to get out of this car. When I get to pit road, I'm going to climb out, and I'm going to the infield care center because that's where they're going to take him. If he's, you know, they're going to make him get in an ambulance, and they're going to bring him to the infield care center, and I'm going to go there and see him. And so the other guy in this crash was Kenny Schrader. He's a good friend of our, good friend of us. So I know Kenny. And so I'm walking into the infield care center trying to find which room they got Dad in, these tiny little rooms. And I walk by one and Kenny's sitting in that room. They're checking him out. And he just looked at me and I just knew when he looked at me. I was like, because he looked in the car when he got out, he went and looked in Dad's car. And he saw Dad. And he saw what Dad was going through and that things weren't good for my dad in that moment. And so when I locked eyes with Kenny, I was like, he knows what's up. And so I think I jumped in a car. They said they taken him straight to the hospital, and I jumped in a car and I went to the hospital. And I got out of the car and I walked into the emergency entrance, just a big but busy space, and I was just like trying to figure out where to go to get to him. And the first room on the left is the emergency room, and I turn in there and look, and there was 20 people over the top of him working on him. And I just exploded. This noise just comes out of you, all this pain and just sadness, and I turned and ran the other direction to the first person I recognized, which was a guy named J.R. Rhodes, who was a PR guy, and I just grabbed him, and I just screamed, or whatever, that noise is. And I ain't never cried about my daddy since. I just, whatever come out of me in that moment, you can't control it. And I went back to the track. When we knew he was gone, I went back to the track and I sat in my bus. All the drivers travel to the track and stay in these buses in this bus lot together. So it's cute, like it's tight community. And that's when I realized, I was like, my daddy ain't here.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Yo, 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 this is Brandon Marshall here to talk to you about some of my favorite things to eat. The carb fear is real, but carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They've remade carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, savory breakfast burrito, or mouth-watering cheeseburger. Something for every craving, including sliced bread, loaves, buns, and tortillas. And they have monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the 2-gram net zero hero croissant or the 1-gram net carb hero cheddar biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code athlete at checkout. That's athlete at hero, hero.co.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. The Active Cash Credit Card is ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, that's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/active. Cash.
Wow. I was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
5 months later, you were back in Daytona for the Pepsi, right? 400. And you won.
Mm-hmm.
Those emotions. And then 3 years after that, you won the big one.
Yeah.
500. Can you explain Daytona, the whole thing? Like,
my dad won 36 races at Daytona, and when he was good. And when he was there, that was his place. Everybody knew it, and he just would make people look silly. And so I wanted to add to, like I said before, I wasn't going to be who he was. I didn't act like him. I didn't have that personality. I wasn't intimidating. I had to strategize. I had to be smooth, and I had a different way of trying to succeed. I knew I wasn't going to measure him. I just wanted to add to that legacy. I knew I could do that.
Right.
So I go to Daytona and I'm going to add to this win total.
That's for the haters.
Yeah. Instead of Dale Earnhardt has 36 wins, they're going to say the Earnhardts have 52 wins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to add, I ain't going to match him, but I'm going to add to it. Mm. And they're going to remember my part.
Right.
And what I'm going to do is going to make him proud. You know what I'm saying? So I would go there with like, I'm going to win one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put another mark down this weekend. You know, and he had the same sort of attitude about Talladega. They're very similar tracks, Daytona and Talladega, 2.5 mile wide open drafting and all that. And me and him just could get it done at them two places.
At what point, you know what I like about this? Because in all of our careers, there's a moment when you realize you finally arrived. Oh, shit, I got it.
Right.
You know, Fred, I know you, yeah. Chan, I know you had that. I'm so, once you made it, it might have been your second year, your third year is really your cutthroat. Either you got it or you don't. At what point in your career, we know how it started.
Yeah.
We know how it ended. But at what moment, what when, in the middle of your career, were you like, I finally arrived?
I think the Daytona 500 win in 2004, that's our Super Bowl. Right. I know it doesn't make any sense why we would feel that way about it, because it's the first race of the year, not the last race of the year. But there's just so much.
It's a dog. Like, it's just.
We start working on those cars months in advance. Every other race, it's weeks to get a car ready. To run here, they'll put weeks into that car. For Daytona, we put months into that one car. And we massage on it and just try to make it as good as we can. And you go there, you qualify, you just want to win. They're going to celebrate you. You're going to do a week and a half, 2 weeks of media. Everybody wants to win that race. And Dad tried to win it for 20 years and finally did, right at the end of his career in 1998. He'd come so close so many times, it was awful. But I won it in 2004. It was my fifth full-time season. And I was so relieved that I didn't have to chase that for 20 years, because he was miserable trying to figure that out. Because he was leading in 1990, led every lap. Nobody could touch him, and ran over a piece of metal in turn three on the last lap. Turn three over here, right? So the checkered flag's right here. His dream. Checkered flag.
Wow.
And he runs out of gas over there, or run over something and flatten his tire and lost.
Wow.
And I mean, he had come that close to winning that race multiple times like that, and had something weird happen at the end. And finally he wins it, and it's like his greatest accomplishment. And so in his mind, he's like out on top of the car, like, finally. And so I wanted to win that race, and when I won it in 2004, I was like, they can't, I know it sounds so cliche, but they can't take that from you. Like, nobody
never,
can say,
never.
They can say, man, you weren't good at this, or you weren't great at this, but they can't say you didn't win a Daytona 500. They can't say you couldn't.
Not once.
Right.
Twice?
Yeah. 10 years later.
They definitely can't say it. That's amazing. Wow.
You speak about the Earnhardt legacy. Like, my wife, when I said I'm coming to ride with Darrell, he's like, I know that name. Like, it's just that legacy. But racing took your father from you. Did that change any way you felt about race? Were you fearful to get in the car after? Like, what did that do, you know, mentally to you?
So, I talked about, you know, how Dad loved Daytona, the track, you know, and racing there. When he died there, I thought, man, I might hate this place. I might never want to come here again. I got to, because if I want to race, it's on the schedule. No way around it. We came back for that July race that we won. There was a weekend off before the race. I filled my Suburban up with some buddies, and we drove down there way ahead of the event. And we drove to the track from Charlotte, about an 8-hour trip, and pulled into the track and drove around it. And I drove over to turn three where Dad's car came to rest after the crash and stopped and got out. And I stood there and it was like a moment to see how I would react to being there and to make sure, okay, I didn't want to do this when it was time to practice. Right? I didn't want to show up and have to get in my car and have a reaction that wasn't favorable or something I couldn't help. I went with my friends. We got out. We didn't talk. I just stood there. I made sure that this is going to be good. I wasn't going to have no problem. My beef wasn't with Daytona. My problem wasn't with Daytona, right?
Yeah.
And in that moment, we sort of shook hands. And then we came back that, like, a couple days later and
kicked ass.
Killed them.
Yeah. See, but in a sense, that's why, in my mind, by definition and by mindset and just that mentality. Like you said, that's your Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, and you went in there. We go in games before big games. We go in the stadium and we say, all right. Yeah, we look around. It's time to get it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like yes. Nothing's gonna stop me.
Yeah. I've had those moments every few times, every once in a while. I didn't know when they were gonna happen. Right? You just show up and you're heading to the track. It don't feel different than any other weekend, but for some reason you walk in, you're like, I feel good.
It just happened.
This is going to be a good one.
Let me tell you what it did for me. I would just start crying.
Really?
I don't know where the tears come from, but every time I cried before a game and I didn't do it on purpose, I had 150 or better. Mm-hmm. My coach said, Fred, you going to cry today? I don't know. It just happened.
We didn't have so many conversations on this show
about opening up,
and you ain't cried yet. And you cried on the field?
Look, I can't make it happen. Y'all cry because y'all just want a hug.
Fred.
Y'all want to have a hug fest. Dale, we right here. Like, you don't know.
Dale, you like food?
Yeah.
You like food? So, when we home, Chef Nancy take care of us. And then we also have, you know, our substitute chef, Chef Lowe, comes in. He takes care of all of our athletes. So we have some food. I feel like you guys took care of us there. So we got Chef Lowe coming in with some food.
Oh, okay.
You know Chef Lowe?
I don't.
I'm going to introduce you to Chef Lowe. This is Chef Lowe.
What's up? What's up, dude? How you?
I'm good.
I know y'all. I'll get y'all in a minute. What's up, boy?
What's up?
Get a little shot.
That boy's sweating. Are you sweating?
He is sweating.
My dude's going to love this. Well, I'm not putting my foot in it. You know what I'm saying? it's all about the food and the science with me. I grew up in Bermuda.
Okay.
So we're big fans of you growing up.
Yes, sir.
We get a shot. All right. Hold on.
Here, I'll hold that.
We in Dale time. We gonna do it like we had a cookout. Ain't no fancy stuff. I had them paper. Yeah,
paper plates. The
paper plates.
Don't.
Now,
you're sweating, bro.
These knives.
Why are you sweating?
My mom gonna be mad about this. I took these from the
Chef Lo, why are you sweating, Chef? In every show, you sweat. What's going on?
Man, you know, it get hot in there. But really, if I should say it, it's always been hot where I was from. Uh-huh. So when I put my heart into the food. The food give it to the heart, uh-huh. And the heart give it back.
Okay.
So we got a little steaks right here.
My goodness.
You see that right
yes.
there?
Yes. That
right
looks
there?
Pretty good.
And not only did I flip it, I flipped it twice. So
don't sweat on the steaks.
Like I said.
Hey, Chef, leave the steaks alone.
Like I said.
How many times you flip it?
I don't really know what to do with my hands. I saw Ricky Bobby do this. So. give him a plate or two and a napkin. I don't know if you've seen me. I'm going to have a new show. It's going to be Kicking It with Chef Lou.
Yeah.
You can find it on Netflix and Hulu. So.
You sweat.
Cheers. Thank you, Chef.
All right. Thank you. So.
Tell them about Chef Lou.
I'm sorry. I was about to show you what it was. That's lobster mac. Steak. I thought you was going to figure it out, but my fault.
No, that's good. I got it figured out.
Lobster mac, steak. The fork's a little dull, but you'll get through.
how is it in racing? Like, how many race car drivers are really, like, set for life?
Basically, he's asking you, how many of the guys got that you money?
It's a good one.
At the end of the day, you know? No, like Danny, he has a team.
Danny has
Mike.
It.
You know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, Denny has that kind of money for sure. He's had that for a long time. Or he's already had that attitude before he got the money, though. But to be honest, he would agree. Our sport exploded in the 2000s, and that was so much money. Souvenirs and drivers got paid souvenir, you know, for a hat getting sold, driver got a good percentage of that money. And that was the die-casts, like the cars. Mm-hmm. That stuff was going flying off the shelves, and I was right in the middle of that. But it's not quite like that anymore. The sales are good, but the drivers aren't thrilled about them. It's hard for me to know what a driver's making today. NASCAR has changed the rules to where they don't tell anyone what a guy wins They used to talk, you know, they used to do like, hey, that's $1 million race. Yeah. It's going to pay $200,000 if you win it. They would use that to make it sound bigger, right, and get people excited. Well, they don't publish that information anymore. So a driver can either say, I want a base, pay me X amount of dollars.
Oh, wow.
And no matter what I win or lose, I want to make this base. Mm. Or a driver can take a big percentage of the winnings and no base.
Mm.
And that's the gamble.
Hold on, stay right there.
What type of driver are you? Hold
on, yeah. What are you going to do? And let's go around and see what everybody would do. Go ahead.
I tried both. I like the base.
You like the base? Oh, you conservative?
No. Mm. So
the base?
Well, the base was good.
Going to be there the first of every month. I like it.
I'm going to take the base too.
You going to take the base?
Because sponsorship, endorsements, I make up for the rest on the back end.
Yeah. That's true too. I had good endorsements.
Just thinking about it like that, I know all your endorsements. I'm not gonna go there, but you was litty.
He was making money.
Oh,
Dad was making money.
He's being humble right now, but I don't want to.
Well, I went to his city today.
Oh my
yeah,
god!
Yeah, so yeah, that thing was an empire.
Yeah, so I didn't get to do? See it.
You
live.
Taking a base?
Base.
What you doing, Freaky Fred?
It all depends. it depends on what the base is. You can't just give me anything.
Let me say you're a top six driver. Okay. You're going to get paid as much as, you know, those. You're in that top six, right?
Got
so
it.
You know if I take the base, I'm getting paid as much as this guy, okay. One of the best guys, right? Mm-hmm. That was where I was at. So it was easy for me to take the base. If I wasn't, if the world didn't view me as a top guy, I would probably take the gamble of making my money on the purse. Because I'm going to go out there and I'm going to win. I'm going to win
right.
That money, right? I'm going to get it. I tried that and I came in low. I missed it and I've had it work for me. Taking the base to me is a safe bet.
Right. So that's like, that's almost equivalent to the franchise tag for us in NFL, right? You're going to get an average of, you know, the top guys at your position.
Right.
Right. So, for me, I would have to say, well, for us, though, with the franchise tag, you don't have a say in it. They just slap it. You're good. You're going to get whatever.
But is it? It's a lot. But isn't it pretty?
Top three in at that position.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But after that, your leverage is out the door because it's 1-to-1 year.
You don't have the opportunity to try to negotiate the deal even beyond.
That's pretty much the team that's going to come in and say, look, It benefits us more to pay you as a franchise, slap the franchise tag on you than to extend you long term.
But it's two ways, though. You know, sometimes to buy the team more time to negotiate, they'll slap the franchise tag on you.
Yeah.
Sometimes, to me, all they're saying is, you know, we don't think you're worth the money that you demand or
want. I mean, because injuries, it's not guaranteed. Then you have the injury part of it. It's football. It is what it is. And it's a young man's game. So if you go out there, you know, you don't take it, you get injured, next man up. You know, but it all depends on if you said the top five or six, I'll probably take the base, see if I can find a way to work in some bonuses.
Yes.
I wanted to say switching gears. That's my Fred.
Switching gears. That got that from Brandon.
You didn't. You brought up your daughters. You have young daughters. You didn't get married till what, 40-something?
Yeah, 43.
Okay, we had
you are a good man.
Well, we've had a discussion on the show about relationships and focus and all the different ways. Were you partying and enjoying your life, or were you?
Wide open.
He said wide open.
On the backstretch? Like, what type of wide open?
You got to clarify because he's Freaky Fred.
So, our thing... What our thing was
who was our?
Me and my friends, my group.
Your amigos.
Name them. Name the friends.
Ah, man.
The squad. Just say my squad.
My posse. We would call ourselves the Dirty Mo Posse. That's what we were. We're Dirty Mo Posse.
Dirty Mo.
Yeah. So Mooresville is the town that we are all from, and that's what we called Mooresville in high school. Everybody in high school called it Dirty Mo. You know, that was the nickname for it. And that's what Dirty Mo Media, right? That we do our podcasts
with. Right,
that's where all that came from. I even got I even got branded with a DMP.
No, you didn't.
Long time ago.
I love it.
No, I got to see this.
No, we ain't going to see this. That was like 4 in the morning, about 12 hours of Red Bull and vodkas and just bad decisions.
Yes, sir.
But I mean, yeah, we race. You come off of that adrenaline. You know, you get out of the car and you're not going to calm down and relax. You're going to run. That adrenaline's going to run all night. And so we'd go home and drink beer and listen to music and just stay up and get out everything out of your system. And then I might go out Tuesday. I might go out Wednesday. And then I'd shut it off and I'd start.
You sure about that?
Oh, every time. I don't know how to prove it or convince you.
Discipline.
But I didn't like being foggy or hungover in a car.
Right.
Because I felt guilt with my team, my crew chief, because they can smell, they can sense, they know you, and they'll be able to tell, like, yeah, you're not here.
A little banged up.
So.
Yeah, but I'd run as hard as I could run.
So Tuesday, Wednesday, like.
Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night. Maybe Wednesday.
So is Thursday practice?
No, here's the backstory. He's not giving it to you straight.
What?
You're not giving it to him straight. Come on. I did my little research. First, Kelly is his sister, played a significant role in your life because Pops was on the road. Okay. Pops on the road. And so can pretty much say she almost raised you.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
Sure. Yeah.
And she really like runs the damn, they have 14 companies, but we'll talk about that next. So anyways, he goes to Kelly and he says, I want to build a treehouse. So he bought this property, wanted to build a treehouse so they can party. Well, and Kelly looks at his ass because, you know, she's the business, right? She's like, you guys are going to fall off the treehouse. Like, that's not a good idea. He's like, okay. So then he builds this city. And this city, it's almost like, I mean, what would you call it? Like a museum? It's amazing now. But it started because you wanted to party.
Yeah. We wanted somewhere so my house didn't get tore up.
I like it.
So I was more focused on partying at times. You know, my sponsor was Budweiser. Like my car was red with Budweiser on it. I was the Budweiser guy.
So you lived the brand.
So they were like, have fun, right? Do that. We want you to drink our product. People know that you love it and enjoy it. And,
right.
You know, they were involved in everything sports-wise. We go into boxing matches and anything else you want to go to and just live in it, you know. From, like, 2001 to 2006, it was just fun.
You see that? You see the difference? I told Justin. Yeah.
Justin Haley.
You see? We talked about his diet and nutrition. The discipline that he has. Yep. And I told him, you're alive, but you're not living. You f***ing live.
Yes.
That's
I
living.
Live, that's for sure.
That's right. What I meant.
Yeah.
You f***ing living.
I've got no regrets.
We all play in the league. We're
yes.
Married guys now, but back in our younger days,
yeah.
I'll say the league comes with perks. Are there NASCAR groupies? Like, how's the women like?
Do they look NASCAR like the wife in Talladega Nights? Do they really look like her?
It's different. It used to be that way. It looks different to me today than it did years ago.
From the sideline.
Yeah.
Everything looks different.
Well, most of the drivers are in relationships or married, raising kids. 10 years ago, there's a lot of young single guys like myself.
Yeah.
You know, and we would run into each other at the bar and we were competitive there just like we were on the track. And everybody had their little cliques that they ran in, and everybody kind of, you know, used a little abrasive with each little clique. And these guys, they talk bad about me, or I heard this guy talk bad about you. And we were immature in the nightclub world, just like we were on the racetrack. Wow. Like I said, man, our sport blew up in the 2000s, and it was popular. And in this area, Charlotte, and in and around here, where I mean, 95% of the drivers live here.
Wow.
You know, most of the race teams are here. All the industry is mainly here. All the crew guys. If there's a little network of bars, nightclubs that most people are going to go to, the patrons and the people that go to those places know they're going to see drivers there, right? And it just kind of becomes this thing. You all like to party together, right? And you kind of, everybody's moving in the same circles a little bit.
So we always ask, every time we sit with drivers and we're around the sport, we always ask the drivers, like, who do you beef with? So who was your beef? Who was your rivalry?
Kyle. Me and Kyle.
Rowdy?
Yep.
Give us some stories.
So, a friendly
no.
beef or... Oh, this was serious.
Yes. Kyle raced for Hendrick Motorsports, and I was leaving the Bud team. I was going to leave that team, leave that car, and go drive for somebody else. And so I was a free agent, and I was moving around, talking to owners and seeing where the interest was for me. And his owner and I were talking. And Kyle and Rick Hendrick, the owner, weren't in a good place. And Kyle can explain that better than I can. So they made a decision to split. So I go into the team. And and I think to Kyle, it was me taking his car. And so Kyle was kind of pushed out into free agency, not really willingly. He ended up getting picked up by Joe Gibbs. They had an insane season. Everything worked out perfect for Kyle. Well, when he was having this great season, I was kind of right on his heels in my new deal that was his deal. And so it immediately kind of pitted us against each other. And he would use every opportunity he could in the media to dig. And I think we went back and forth with that. He wrecked me at Richmond. I'm leading the race. Denny was leading and had a flat tire. So now I'm leading the race. There's four laps to go. Mm. Kyle is on my inside. I feel like I'm gonna win. I'm in the outside line. That's where I wanted to be, and I think that's where I should, you know, that's what's going to win the race. And he's down here on the bottom, and he got loose or something and slid into me and spun me out, and I hit the wall. Fans, man, they went crazy. That's really what sent Kyle into villain town.
Moment.
Yeah, I think so. And so that and a lot of other things that he did, he didn't handle some of those situations. Like in that moment, instead of getting out of the car and saying, yeah, I made a mistake or I did it on purpose, he would just split, like avoid the interview, blow people off, right? And fans were like, you can't blow people off. You can't blow off those interviews and you're acting like a child, right? Mm. And but he's matured and gotten way better since then. So we go back to Richmond the next time and I ran over him, wrecked him.
You did it on purpose? Yeah. Did you do it on purpose?
Oh, yeah. And so I had to. Yeah. Like, even if it wasn't
That's
in
crazy.
My
Y'all
mental...
going 180 miles per hour.
It's not like in my mental character to go out there and do that. But if I didn't do that, here I am. I'm right behind him getting ready to go in this corner. And everyone in the place knows that this is an opportunity for me to make that happen. And 85% of them want me to do it. What if you can't, you got to do it.
You got to do it.
And so I wished I'd have wrecked him harder than I did. I hit him and I thought I hit him hard enough and he goes up there and backed in the wall. It hurt his day, which was my intent. Right. But I wanted him to wreck hard.
Isn't
like
that,
I wrecked.
That's good for the sport though.
That is. Right? You got to have the good versus evil. And so we continue to bash each other and dog each other in the media. And just dirty look each other every time. Just hate each other. Like, I can't stand to be around the guy. Physically uncomfortable to be in the same room with him. And I started the podcast. So I invited him on my podcast, and we relived
all
that.
Say the name of your podcast. A little shameless plug.
The Dale Jr. Download. So I used to just go on there and just talk about the race weekend and what I thought about it. But then it's kind of turned into this interview conversation like we're having. And I said, Kyle, it's time for you to come on the show. Let's talk about this. Let's stop this. It's so far in the past. And we talked about it. And he said some things that blew me away.
He came to the Empire?
Yeah. He came to the room you were in today.
Wow. I need to go back and watch that.
We sat down and talked it out. And it was great. I was glad to not have, because I still was uncomfortable being around him. Didn't like it. Didn't want to be around him. I don't like to use the word hate because I didn't really hate him. I just didn't like him, man.
It happened.
I wanted to fix that. I can't live that way. I don't like living like that. And I'm glad we did. And we communicate. We text, we give each other advice.
You mentioned Joe Gibbs.
Yeah.
I know you're a Washington football team fan.
Yeah.
But Gibbs Redskins, right? Yeah. Now, Washington football team.
Yeah.
What's up with the team, man?
my mom and dad split up in 78. I was four. She moved to Chesapeake, Norfolk area, and everything up there is Washington. Everything. And I lived in around Charlotte. There was no team here. And so you were either a Washington fan or a Dallas fan or maybe an Atlanta Falcon fan. I would go to my mom's twice a year, once it's Christmas and once at in the middle of summer. And she always had like a jersey, Art Monk jersey, all the guys. I was a big Art Monk fan, him and Daryl Green. And so I just thought Art was, he was, if you needed a first down, that's where you were going to go. And he just, he was just no controversy, reliable, healthy all the time. Just I liked his style. And
sound he like broke, an ex-receiver to me.
He broke Steve Largent's record, I think, for the most catches in a season to set that's since been broken. But that was a big deal. They traded him to the Jets. Anyhow.
No, that's fine, because what I wanted to get at is we talk about football, and nowadays all you hear is concussion, 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 CTE. I know you're an advocate, you know, around concussion, you spoke about your career and being able to walk away from the sport. Talk to us about that, you know.
Well, it wasn't a choice. Like, my concussions I had to face it. I couldn't drive a car, right? I was hurt so bad that I couldn't do my job. And so I had to fix it if I was going to. Like, I know you guys have dealt with injuries of all types. And so when my concussions happened, I was worried about, like, is this my new normal? Mm-hmm. Right? All those symptoms that I was having, I can't live like this. Right? I don't want to. This ain't going to be every day.
What was the symptoms?
Balance issues. Just turn a corner, you know, get up and walk that way would just, you know, you just get nauseous. And bad vision problems, blurry vision, and my eyes would try to like look at a target something with my eyes, and they would jump off that target. I couldn't control them.
Were you afraid?
Heck yeah.
In the NFL, they tell us that we might eventually succumb to CTE.
Right. So
a lot of us that have had concussions.
I am. Very much worried about what, you know, 20 years from now looks like for me. You know, we hear the stories about other people that have dealt with CTE and have some bad things happen to them, right? And they find themselves in places where they can't escape, right? And they can't fix it. And so, you know, I'm definitely nervous about just how sharp will I be. Am I going to have like this mental decline that's going to be a little accelerated, right? All of us are going to have a decline of some sort, but will mine be accelerated? I know that my eyesight used to be perfect, and I know that it's gone down and it's going down. And my doctor's like, you know, that's probably something that got kick-started sooner than normal because of your injuries, and it's probably something that's accelerated because of your injuries. And I'm thinking, well, I hope that's all that I got to worry about is my eyesight going bad and getting a new prescription every 10 months.
We're all with you. We go through it, yeah.
One of the things you said offline, though, was I was miserable driving.
Yeah.
So meaning, like, you're happy now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
So that's a good thing.
I wanted to add to that what Fred asked me, and we talked about it today. I know that if I want to have that long-term sharpness and the best possible outcome, it's in my hands. There's things I can do, right? And that's ride my bike. That's my mental health, my physical health. All those things are going to make all that. If I don't take care of that, I'm absolutely going to have problems.
Right.
And so I'm not going to be mentally sharp. You know, if I want to, you know, I still like to drink beer, hang out with my friends, and I want to go drink beer at a bar. Well, if I'm going to do those kind of things to my body, I got to do something on the other side.
Correct.
Right? To take care of it, keep myself going. And I know that when I rehabbed, all my rehab for my concussions was all simple exercise, which I didn't I didn't understand how that was going to really fix my problems, because I'm thinking, well, if my wiring's messed up, how is messing with this weight ball going to help that? It does. It did. It fixed it. I know it did. I did it multiple times through multiple concussions and fixed it, right? And I know when I don't do those things and move away from exercise, I decline in cognitive skill. I decline in mental toughness and sharpness. Yeah. And to stay elite, or to stay where I was, I know what I need to do.
That really rolls into mental toughness, just mental issues, right? For me, when my anxiety is at its highest, it's because I've taken multiple weeks of just not doing what I've been doing the past 20 years. So you have to stay on it. I think Ocho says no coddling. You know, you can't coddle these people. You can't coddle yourself. You got to really get out there and be proactive. Try and make yourself better. It's a challenge and a fight, but it starts with you wanting to do better and want to be better. You know, and if you pay attention to yourself and your body, you know, you listen to that, you're going to tell yourself, hey, man, get your ass off the couch. Go do something. You'll feel a little better. And we all go through that. But it comes back to your mental capacity.
I never knew how much simple exercise mattered to your mental health and happiness until like the last 2 or 3 years of my career. I was telling Brandon today, a buddy of mine got me into cycling, and I rode my first year 2,400 miles on the highway.
It's a ton.
And dude, I was as good as I'd ever been, you know, sharp, happy, feeling good, you know, just could do anything, right? And now that I don't ride that much, I know what I need to do to get that fixed, you know?
You got a Peloton at the crib?
No, I ride on the street. My wife has a Peloton, and that thing,
Peloton?
You got
You country, don't let your
you
country
sound like,
come
remember
Peloton,
the episode yeah. where I was, that was
you
me.
Got Peloton. A, the thing, listen, the, you have to crank the tension on it. I ain't gonna do what it.
It's a beast.
No. What I'm trying to say is, with that, when you get on a bike and you got to go up that hill, there ain't one way. There's one way up it, and that's pedaling
that's
hard.
It.
That Peloton, you can cheat.
You got Peloton. It's Peloton, Dale.
I like Peloton.
But you don't look like the cheating type, so it's all good.
I don't
trust myself. Right.
Who do you think should sit in this seat next? And I stole this from All the Smoke. Got Jack and you got Matt Barnes do a phenomenal job. They have a podcast that's crushing it right now. And they asked me that question when I was able to go on their show. So, you know, I'm stealing that from those guys.
Yeah, Jimmy Johnson.
Johnson?
Yeah. So Jimmy Johnson, he's just retired from stock car racing, and he's a rookie at 45 years old trying to go into IndyCar. I talked about that transition from one type of racing to another and how hard it is. He won 7 championships in our sport. Him, my dad, and Richard Petty, the only three people that have ever done that. Jimmy won 5 of those in a row. No one's ever going to touch that. 5 championships in a row. The record was 3 that stood since the mid-70s. He's an athlete in every sense of the word, so he belongs on this show. And, you know, he's just – I just think the world of him. So – you know, he would be able to speak on a lot of things. I think, you know, the mind, the body, and being an athlete, a father, being successful, being a businessman, and also trying to transition into something that's completely foreign to himself at 45 years old. He's basically trying to recreate himself as a race car driver and try something that he's completely out to lunch in.
Right?
He's gonna be floundering for a while till he figures it out. So
it's hard to put it down.
We're in Charlotte.
Yeah.
This is where you like to party. I've never partied, but we're in Charlotte. So we could take it off our bucket list. Tonight, we party with Dale.
Can we go to the city?
No.
Tony, let's turn up.
Hey, y'all, I'm going out.
Where are we going? We're partying with Dale
tonight. We're going to go to the city. We're going to go to the Empire.
We're going to the Empire with Dale.
Y'all manscaping?
Huh? Hey, Dale, do you manscape?
No. No.
The three-way manscape. The party style.
Alicia, can we get Dale a manscape? Please?
You got to clean up down there because you're a little rough up here.
I'm 46.
Bro, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Hygiene.
This is what no, you do. Itches. No.
Your beard is cool.
I shaved my chest one time. Never again. No. Never again. I ain't shaving nothing else.
Well, I love your beard.
Yes.
Keep that going.
My wife
but shave your balls.
No. No, never.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.